Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Patty Fair and Lyle Bronze from Buckle Up for Broncos. So tell me a little bit about the Buckle Up for Broncos campaign.
Well, the Buckle Up for Broncos was started out on the Twitter hashtag, by one of the parents of 29 that were on the Broncos bus when it crashed, and it kind of grew from there. We all started using the hashtag Buckle Up the Broncos and promoting the use of seatbelts on buses. And then it started out, there's also a Twitter account called Buckle Up the Broncos and a Facebook page called Buckle Up the Broncos, and also promote the use of seatbelts on buses, because a lot of the buses have seatbelts, but the riders don't seem to use them, even though it's law in Saskatchewan that if seatbelts are available, that you have to use them. But there's very few people using seatbelts on buses, and we believe that a lot of our 16 that passed away on April 6th, 2018 would have survived that crash had they been wearing their seatbelts.
Or at the very least, the injuries might have been reduced for those
who
survived. That's
right.
So, how do you get the word out about the campaign itself?
I'm sorry?
So, how have you been spreading the word beyond just social media in terms of what you want to say about why this is a good idea?
Well, I think we've been mainly using social media. I think some of the parents, when they're doing radio interviews and TV interviews, have been mentioning it. But it's, I guess, in most of our interviews, we've been promoting the petition for truck driver training, better truck driver training, a little harder than the Buckle Up. The Buckle Up, I guess, we've been relying on social media to promote that so far.
So, if you don't mind my asking, could you tell me a little bit about your family members who were involved in the crash and what you would hope they would want you to do in regards to the campaign itself?
Well, Dana Bronze, the athletic therapist for the Humble Broncos, was my daughter, and I'm sure that she would want us to promote the use of seatbelts as much as possible. And I think she would be alive today had she be wearing hers. I'm not sure what more I can say about that. But
Patty, would you like to enter in on this?
I just think, you know, unfortunately, we've all been given a voice, and I think we need to take this tragic crash, as well as all the others that happen across Canada every year, and try to make a difference. It is clear that something has to happen here. We have industry support asking for more regulation, more training. Where do you get industry support asking for things like that? Clearly, there's a problem in Canada. And, you know, I have the utmost respect for the families that have stepped forward from the Humboldt crash. You know, we're trying to move this forward and trying to get our government to take a look at this and change our system. It's archaic. Europe has changed drastically. The United States has changed. How many more crashes are we going to encounter before something happens? And we have a national standard and national training put in place.
So if the laws were enacted to make this enforceable, what would you recommend in terms of anyone who doesn't comply?
If they don't comply, they don't have a license. It's very simple. I would like to see a federal entry-level training program developed and implemented across Canada. It needs to be a requirement before Class 1 licenses are awarded. With that, there needs to be a graduated licensing program in place so that they are not, you know, currently in the prairies, you can go get a license in July with a day cab and a flat deck. Take that license, and in the dead of winter, the same year, you can go haul logs across mountain passes. It's not rocket science, but this is not an effective system. I would also like to see the National Occupational Classification Code be modified so that Class 1 drivers are considered a trade. We need to give the industry the respect it deserves, and it's a skilled trade. It needs to be treated as such, and then drivers can apply for scholarships and bursaries and loans to help compensate for the additional training and the cost of that training that is going to be incurred on the industry. I'd also like to see the training facilities to be evaluated yearly so that some checks and balances are in place to ensure that there is effective training being delivered. But again, this all needs to happen on a federal level because this license is a federal license. If it's going to be done provincially, then they shouldn't be allowed to leave that province, the respective province that they have acquired their license in. Our terrain across Canada is too varied, and the weights of these loads are too varied to have just one general license for this. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So if each of you could send a message to the community about why this never should have happened and what we as a people should do to prevent further tragedies, what would you say?
Ask them to sign the petition. Ask them to contact their MLA. The petition could be found on the Humboldt Broncos website. It's very simplistic. You just go onto their website. They have a button. The Broncos are supporting this immensely. Just hit the button. It takes you to the petition. But contact your MLA. Contact your MP. Contact your Minister of Transportation for the respective province as well as federally. You know, Canada has to drive this, and it seems to be taking the government a little bit longer than I feel it should to respond to this. So we all need to step up, and if Canada's roads are going to be safer, Canada needs to drive this initiative.
And Lyle, what would you
say? I agree with what Patty said. You know, got to give credit to Saskatchewan and Alberta and Ontario. And I think now Manitoba is coming on board also with a higher degree of training before you can get your Class 1A license. But it needs to be a national standard and so that you can't go to one province and get a Class 1A and not have the equal training to the provinces that have higher level of training. We just need to be better training our drivers, and we got to make sure they're going out there with the right attitude also. Create a culture of safety.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to hear some interviews from Wreckfest 2019. This is Cam Wells here with
Fatima
and Natalie from McMaster University.
And they're going to be telling me a little bit about what led them to Wreckfest today and their background in accessibility. So what led you to the event today?
So we were actually brought forward to us within our program. So Sukina Dada, the founder of Smile Wreckfest, approached the program knowing that students from the program are given the opportunity to pursue evidence-based practice opportunities. And so,
good shout out there.
Yeah. And so she was hoping to make Smile a little bit more accessible and inclusive, specifically in regards to the accessibility and inclusivity of Wreckfest. And so she wanted us to kind of take a look at what's out there in the literature and how maybe we can provide recommendations for the event and for next year's event.
And what have you seen so far in terms of what's actually working for accessibility? Some features here that might be disability friendly.
It's a loaded question. In terms of when we walked into the facility, we noticed that there was no, it's kind of an accessible space. There's wide hallways, the doors are accessible in terms of them opening automatically wide enough for wheelchairs. We noticed that the bathrooms, there was accessible washrooms and that they had grab bars. And
so we noticed a lot of strengths in the sense that it's even ground, you know, it'd be easy to navigate around, but you know, just as all spaces, I'd say there are some challenges, and I think that goes in line with most facilities having to meet AODA standards. But also recognizing that AODA standards are the bare minimum of what should be implemented.
We're a good starting place, but one must never just comply with the law and leave it at that. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's things that, you know, I think we should be more proactive in how we address spaces and space design instead of kind of that retroactive approach that most places tend to take on. And I think AODA standards, like you said, are the bare minimum starting point. But
and if you could each send any message to the community about why accessibility matters for us all, what would you say?
I think we talked about in our paper that we in our research paper we wrote about using a human rights model towards tackling disability. So considering the needs of everybody, regardless of if they have a disability or not, in order to make the environment as inclusive and accessible as possible. So maybe using a universal design where it's creating a space to maximize it for the most amount of people as possible, and using a disability lens when creating spaces or events for future events.
See, that's the thing. Universal design isn't weighted one way or the other. It's not all accessible features, it's not all inaccessible features. It's good balance, bearing in mind that someday someone with a disability may come through the door.
And not even an individual with a specific disability per se. Aging has its own effects on the body, which, you know, universal design would help individuals that are aging as well, right?
Hey, Sunny, what's that? Like, so you were each telling me that you're involved with some accessibility audits and your program is in the field of disability studies. So.
Yep, so Nat and I are from McMaster University. We're occupational therapy students, and we're currently doing a project on Smile Wreckfest to make it the most inclusive and accessible event as possible. So for our project, we actually did a knowledge to action, which involves doing a literature review to see what the research says about accessibility and inclusivity, and then formulating recommendations that we distributed to the volunteers here at Smile's Wreckfest to see if they can implement it to make it more inclusive and accessible.
So what are the next steps in your project?
So we're here doing an audit today. We're looking beyond physical accessibility.
Always a good call.
We're looking beyond physical accessibility, just recognizing that physical space is one component that can impact engagement at an activity, but it's also the social environment and the attitudinal environment surrounding a space that could really impact somebody's engagement. So we're hoping to just get a little bit more information on how that's currently being addressed, with hopes to, you know, figure out ways that we can implement it in the future, implement new recommendations in the future.
And a lot of our recommendations are focused on how to change the environment to fit the individual rather than changing the individual themselves. So changing the demands of the activity, can we change environmental features to be more suitable for the individual, are some of the recommendations that we provided to the volunteers.
Thank you both.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Windsor Classic Chorale presents a celebration of choir singing with their May concert, We Sing Because, on Saturday, May 11th at Paulin Memorial Presbyterian Church in South Windsor. The chorale is joined by special guests organist David Palmer and soprano Dr. Jennifer Swanson. Tickets are $20 in advance and $25 at the door. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the concert begins at 7:30. Tickets are available at www.windsorclassiccorale.org. Celebrate choral singing Saturday, May 11th with the Windsor Classic Chorale. Proudly sponsored by CJAM 99.1 FM.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little about the Buckle Up for Broncos campaign and about some accessibility audits being conducted by some young students at McMaster. Coming up next, we're going to hear a little more about RecFest.
It's Cam Wells here with
Sakana Dada.
She's going to be telling me a little bit about her role in organizing RecFest today.
Basically, we're putting this event together with a lot of support from volunteers. Actually, there are over 100 volunteers here today. We actually have roughly about 700 to 750 people here today. A lot of support from different organizations as well. There's Special Olympics Ontario and CDRCP. Dean Support Services, Nyssa Homes, Holland Blurview. So it's really exciting to have also so much support from so many other organizations.
What was the inspiration behind the whole event?
I mean, we meet person after person, family after family, who tells us that there are not a lot of inclusive events. And, you know, a lot of the time when we hear about inclusion, it's not just about inclusion for persons with disabilities. It's not just about inclusion, places that are inclusive or accessible in that regard, but also places that practice cultural safety, places that have spaces, for example, for meditation and prayer. That's important to a lot of people, and that's what we tried to do today, try to make that happen. And I think just by the looks of it, you know, a lot of people are laughing and smiling and having fun. I think it's turned out to be quite a successful event.
You raise an interesting point in that isolation, not having events like this, can breed its own mental health issues and disabilities. So, in a sense, it's preventative.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of people, they don't come out to things, not because they don't
want
to.
Ladies and gentlemen, we still have a wallet.
But because they, you know, they just... A, they're not invited, or B, the space is inaccessible. Like, I'll give you an example. If we have an event and it's not, accessible to people like for transportation, then we can't expect a lot of people to show up. Or we can only expect people with cars to show up. And we can only expect drivers to show up. But that's not fair.
Wow. The thing about that is you're never going to cover every contingency, but you do what you can to make it as inclusive as possible.
Brand new t-shirts here.
Well, and that's the thing, like with being inclusive, is you do the best you can, but we have to try. And, you know, the problem is that a lot of places, you know, we don't even see that effort being made. So, for example, you know, things are only, you know, provided in like the English language. There are a lot of people who don't speak the English language, who are not communicating in the English language, and for those people, they might not feel included. But when we have interpreters, and when we have, you know, ASL, and when we have visual signs, and when we have like a lot of attempts to make things inclusive, then more and more people feel welcome.
Wow. When it comes to breaking down barriers, somebody has to be first, and that sets a precedent. And it's events like this one that really do speak to the fact that, yes, we can create something accessible and fun.
I mean, I think we definitely can, and I don't, you know, I don't think that this is the end. I think this is just, you know, like, this is a journey, and I think what we need to do is we need to continue to have events like this, and not just SMILE, but all organizations, like all organizations, all agencies, all, you know, all kind of community events that take place. Like, we have to think about all Canadians, right? Because we are all Canadian, but, you know, part of Canadian culture is diversity. And so to honor that and respect that and embrace that, one of the things is to ensure that we are responding to our diverse needs. And for us, that is what SMILE is all about, and that is what this event represents. You know, and that's what we hope. We hope that that message is coming across, that everybody is welcome.
So, in what way do you want to see this grow for the future?
I mean, what we've been hearing is to have more. A lot of time, a lot of resources, and you know, energy has been put into hosting such a large-scale event. But I don't think it has to be large scale. I think even smaller events, but continuous, events that bring people together, events that bring different organizations and community members together, I think that's what's important. So we plan to have more and more of these, and our hope is also, and most importantly, that kids and families have fun. Because at the end of the day, like, we can have 100 events, but we want people to be having fun. And you know, like I said, like from what it seems like, people are having fun, and that's what's most important.
Well, in a day-to-day sense, if you remind them that they're welcome and that the barriers don't have to stop them from coming out and enjoying, even if the events are smaller, you might see a lot of participation.
Most definitely, you know, just welcoming people and putting every effort that, you know, possible to make sure that we are inclusive and we are accessible and always growing and, you know, making changes where change needs to happen. You know, one of the things we learned quickly with SMILE is that, you know, it's not always going to be perfect and there's room for change. And, you know, when people give us suggestions, we want to take those suggestions and we want to make it better, not only for next year, but, like, better in the moment, better for tomorrow, better for the next generation. We know that living here in Canada, like, there's a lot of, you know, great laws that protect us, that, you know, encourage, like, accessibility and inclusiveness, but by no means are we sort of free from environmental and attitudinal barriers. Like, we, and, you know, acknowledging that, I think, is important, but also, like, making real change, whether it's a day-to-day event or whether it's us all getting together and working on policy. And for us, these kinds of events help us push us in that direction, you know, the direction of making change and the direction of making things inclusive. What we've seen today is that people are coming out. They're responding to us being inclusive. And that inclusivity, that's not only, like I said, about, like, you know, different abilities, different cultures, different faiths, but also, like, for example, the ticket price was only $5. That's also being inclusive. You know, if it's a $50 ticket or a $100 ticket, we can't expect everybody to come out.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank you so much, Cameron. Like always, you know, we appreciate you being here and supporting us.
My pleasure.
To end today's show on a high note, folks, we're going to hear from Kelsey Rose McDonald, a Toronto Sunshine girl who decided to become involved with the ICHA Fishing Derby. So tell me a little bit about what led you to want to be involved with the ICHA Derby.
So I just heard about the ICHA last year and unfortunately was not able to make it out due to prior commitments. But I am friends with some fishing TV stars like Italo, Scotty Martin, Mike, Linda, and I was at the Sportsman Show, and that is where I met Pat for the first time. And he brought up the ICHA and asked if I would like to come out. And I was like, you know what? I might as well. Let's put it in my calendar. And now I'm going to be a guest speaker, so I will be saying a little bit about myself as well as being one of the judges for the dance-off. And I think it's absolutely incredible that they are letting me come down there and wear my crown and sash with me being in rain from my pageant from last year.
So what's your biggest hope for the Derby? What do you most want to see?
So my biggest hope is to try to get more anglers out there with any sort of disability and fish, because I know there's not very many out there right now, and I know a lot of them do enjoy it, and having this event is absolutely incredible. Pat is superb for doing this and seems like he's had a great turnout every year, and I think it's just awesome for all the kids and their support workers to just come out for a day of fishing. A lot of them don't really want to go out in the public because of all the hooks and things, so having this event is pretty incredible for them to just come out and participate and just have a amazing time.
So if you could send any message to the community about why this is important, what would you say?
So I think it's important, and my message to community would be that just because we have disabilities or just because we look like we're not normal, like, we should be able to participate in what we would like to. So if that means to participate in fishing or participate in other events, I think that the community should allow us to do that. I don't think we should be pushed away just because we have a disability. I struggle down here from being pushed away, and I don't like it, and I want the community to understand, like, we're normal like everyone else. Like, we can do fishing. Yeah, we may have some troubles and some struggles, but don't look at us like we're handicapped and can't do anything, or look at us like we're struggling. Like, just let us be, let us enjoy ourselves, let us have fun, and I wish, like, the community would know that and try to include us in more events instead of pushing us away.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'll never understand, folks. Just because a person has a disability or comes from a particular background, how can we as a people, in good conscience, just shuffle them out of the way? They want to participate and be a part of all the wonderful things that are to be expected of life. That's really the point of existence, to live to the fullest and to appreciate. And I'm glad today's show was able to give a little emphasis to that, because no matter what the event is or where a person's coming from, the basic need for human appreciation, respect, and dignity remains. The truth is, any person with a disability, or any person at all, can and will succeed. It's just a question of what doors we as a people will open to make sure they have their chance. And honestly, for Kelsey, she's right. People should never be pushed away just because we feel stronger, or we feel superior. It's not how it works. And for events like Wreckfest, creating something special just to be enjoyed, it's a wonderful thing to see. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.